three, four.
I've got a quick question. Every week you manage to time up the intro with the clicks. Have you just got the BPM just ingrained in your head?
No, God, no. I totally cut it up.
Oh, did
so
you?
That it lines. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I line it up. And like last week I didn't line up the four because I was just so frazzled and I felt terrible. And I was like, oh, it sounds like we rushed it. No, our timing isn't even remotely close to the timing of that intro. Or so.
Every week I'm just like, oh, we're so good.
No, we're not. I hope you guys at home know we don't hear that intro. So that intro gets put in afterwards. So it's not like we're trying to be on with it. But, you know, I mean, podcasts never leave that part in. And it just, I don't know, I left it in for the first couple episodes when I was editing it. And I was like, I'm leaving it in.
Yeah.
We're counting ourselves in. It's how we get started. But there's also intro music, and it sounds terrible that there's this groove going, and then we're just so, two professional drummers are so not even close to that groove. So, yeah, I cut it up so that it fits.
I've ruined the smoke and mirrors, haven't I? I've kind of mucked it up for us. I should have just edit this out.
That part's just going to the Patreons. Now, only the Patreons know about that, but our regular listeners have no idea. Speaking of which, what a week.
Yeah, mate. And talking about imposter syndrome, it's kind of crazy that these people want to get more involved with us talking life and drums. It's amazing, yeah. Mate. I'm kind of overwhelmed, and it's just like the most exciting thing ever, man. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's something that I wasn't quite prepared for. It kind of blew up very fast. So thank you to all the Patreons. And you guys had your first impact on the podcast. We were able to, for the Patreons only, put up a poll. What do you want the next episode to be? You guys voted imposter syndrome. That's this episode. So you guys had a massive impact, and we absolutely appreciate that. Also, last bit of house cleaning, Patreons, you guys and Eddie and myself, we will all be hanging out next Saturday. So Saturday. Did we even look?
Saturday the something. Doing it? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, the 26th, the day after Christmas. We don't even care. We don't care what's going on in your lives. We're doing it. So Saturday the 26th, day after Christmas. I'm sure Eddie will just bring Travis to the studio.
Yeah,
it'll be a nice baby hang. But yeah, so if you are a Patreon, you guys will get the invite on the Patreon page, and it'll only be available to you. And if you're not a Patreon yet, please sign up, and then you can be part of that hang. So you have all the way until Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to sign up and get the Zoom call invite, and then we will all be hanging out and having some fun. Dude, what's going on with your sweat? Are you working out?
I'm working out. I feel like absolute garbage, mate. I've just drank this weird energy drink with like BCAAs and amino acids in it, and my heart is thumping, mate.
Wait, so you drank something with BCAAs and amino acids? Do you not know what BCAAs are?
It's branched chain amino acids, right?
Okay.
But this is the thing though, like the bottle said BCAAs, and then next to it said amino acids. And I looked at that and went, the branding's off there, guys. I love your drink, is off. Hence why I said it.
You know what though? To the typical consumer, maybe they did have the marketing meeting and they were like, well, we're not gonna double it up. I mean, it's branched chain amino acids. We don't need to say it twice. And then somebody was like, no, you don't understand who's drinking this. You really do need to say it twice. This has vitamins and vitamins.
Yeah.
It has minerals and manerals. It has it all.
It's lethal. So yeah, I'm starting the new program tomorrow, which is wicked. I can't wait, mate. I just looked in the mirror and I was like, yeah, I need to. My goal is to get in better shape, but for me, it's just the consistency, mate. I need a program that is not too difficult and something that I can do consistently and love, and I just want to fall in love with that routine as opposed to the end result. And I've done a few workouts, I've done a few programs before, but they were too extreme, and I was an idiot to think that I could keep that up and be consistent with it. And then, you know, not making excuses, but it's been a busy time, and especially being a new dad, you're sort of... own time is at the bottom of the pile when it comes to like the priority. So now I'm like, boom, I've got my routine down, I think. So yeah, I've got a new personal trainer.
That's awesome. And I would assume it. Too, with I'm obviously 14 years older than you, so we're in different places, but you have a kid, so that makes you older than me already as far you're dealing with a level of maturity that I will never deal with. So I wonder too if fitness has made the switch for you the way it did for me, which is my fitness is now about having a long, enjoyable life.
Yes.
Like okay, here's a great example. I did a drum camp in Greece last year, I think, or maybe 2 years ago now, about 2 years ago. And I got there and I just thought, this place is amazing. So I immediately called Amber and I was like, babe, book a flight, meet me here. And we're going to go from Athens to Santorini. Everyone here is telling me that Santorini is the jam. We got to go there. It's a once in a lifetime experience. Well, we got to Santorini and we stayed on Aya or Io. Anyways, we stayed in the, like, we went for it. It was like, let's just drain the savings and have the greatest vacation we can. So we're on the cliffs and everything. Well, to get down to the restaurant we want to go to, there's like, it's on the side of a mountain. So it's 1,000 steps just carved into a mountain. Super treacherous. Now, I was thinking, oh, it'd be really cool to have these people come with us or these people. And I had to actually think they couldn't do these stairs. It would be actually be really dangerous for us. So that was like my kick in the ass to stay fit and to get into CrossFit was that I don't want to have places like Santorini ruled out for me because it'd be like, well, I can't do the stairs because of my bum ankle.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, my knee's been acting up in my hips. So it's like, no, I just want to stay fit for fitness sake, which is way different than why you and I got fit in the first place in our 20s, which was because we wanted to drum with our shirts off.
Yeah, that was always an aim for me. But I was a chubby
totally.
I was a chubby little kid, mate. So getting rid of that lower...
Were you really?
Oh, yeah. I love crisps, which you Americans call potato chips. I love crisps.
Right.
I can do a 24-pack, mate. No bother. So that's like 24 packs of crisps in like a big bag. And yeah, mate. But a goal for me, and as vain as this does sound, it's to not worry how I look on camera. You know, like you probably feel it.
Totally.
We film ourselves every single day. Well, a lot. And there's nothing worse when I've forgotten my monitor and I'm just filming and, you know, the camera's a little bit low down. And then I look back and I'm like, oh my God, is that me? I'm like, is that actually me? Like, I didn't realize I had 8 chins. Do you know what I mean? And it kind of just throws me off for the day. And I'm like, oh, mate, I need to really just get back into just a healthy
routine. Tomorrow I'll be skinnier. Tomorrow's going to be great. I'll be skinnier. I'll lose 5 pounds while I sleep. It's all going to be great.
Shout out the aperture light. I angle this perfectly.
You and I both have the Sigma 20 mil lens. Great lens, unless you get stuck on the edge of it. Because it has distortion and it will round your ass out.
Yeah, it's so
true. And so like I make sure that I'm dead center in the middle of that lens just to have a little bit of pin cushioning and kind of, it's like people will be like, man, you look really good. And I'm like, well, the lens is literally distorting the image to drop about 15 pounds off of me.
I've got a question.
Yeah, what's up?
Have you got an Apple Watch? Very weird question right now. But
I do.
Do you recommend them?
Yeah. If you're somebody that can use it, they're actually really good. The newest one is the one I have. I love it. I think that there is, when you do your workout, you are going to burn exactly how many calories you burn. There's no piece of tech that can change that. But there is like a bit of extra momentum gained by looking down at your watch and knowing that it was 700 calories.
Yeah.
Like the feedback of that is really amazing. So even though I don't wear it, you'll never see me on camera wearing it just because I'm a watch guy and I love watches. It freaks me out. I'm just not wearing it. It's not going to happen. Anyways,
that's why I don't want to ask because I've never seen you. I thought, no, Mike's definitely going to have one, but I've never seen him have one.
Right.
So I'm going to ask.
So yeah, I wear it every morning and then it's, so in my, the center armrest in my car has like a USB charger in it. So it just sits in there charging. And then every morning I put it on, wear it for CrossFit, do my workout, get all my my feedback. I think it's really great to be encouraging for fitness, especially for people that have long hours and just need to be reminded. Hey, because you can tell it, remind me to move every hour. Because there are people that will put in 4 or 5 hours without really moving because of their job. You know, they're at a desk. And so that stuff is great. I do wish I wasn't such a watch snob and could wear it every day because I really would. And I will say this, the change in the last 2 Apple Watches. So I think it's like the 11 and the 12. Or I don't know what the numbers are, but the last 2 have been really good because I had the first one and I actually returned it right away. I was like, this isn't even as good as a Fitbit, but the last two that have come out have been pretty amazing. Okay. So something to think about for sure. Yeah. I would definitely do it. Okay, it is time for us to play a game. I'm excited about this. We are constantly being made fun of by our misses, by our ladies, because of the fact that when I wake up, because of our time difference, when I wake up, I usually have 4 to 5 voice notes from you. So the first thing that Amber hears in the morning is your voice. And she's always dogging me out for it. So I thought, you know what? I'm not running from this. We're going to lean into this. So I'm going to play a game with you that I play with Amber. It's called Would You Rather? Okay. I think I made it up. I don't know. Okay. This is not going to be easy for you, buddy. So I wish you the best.
Am I in a time restriction or?
Nope.
Okay, cool. All right. It's good to
know. So I tried to think, what if I could grant you, if I was Eddie's genie and could grant you one wish, I tried to think, what would that wish be? I went for the top of the top of the top.
Okay.
Then with that wish, I'm going to see if I can tempt you out of that wish.
Okay, cool. All right, great.
So the wish that I have granted you is 24 hours of conversation with Jackson, your dog.
Okay.
You can finally know what he's been thinking. You can finally find out what he thinks about when you rub his belly. I mean, and you're going to get to hear his voice. Does he have an accent? I don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know.
For sure.
He might be an American. You have no idea. So you're going to finally get to talk to Jackson for 24 hours. And he's a bro. Like, it's not dog talk. Okay. It's full blown conversations.
Okay, cool.
Would you rather be able to talk to Jackson for 24 hours or get a signed pair of Jordans that Michael won in his last championship run?
Oh.
That he wore. He wore in his last championship run.
All right. Well, the Jordans, that's a life-changing amount of money.
Okay.
But.
So you're going to take shoes over talking to your dog.
No.
And knowing that you Dr. Doolittle the whole thing.
There's a part of me that knows what this dog is thinking. You know what I mean? Like,
but that's what I'm thinking is I don't think you do. What if he was like, hey, you and mom are morons. And you could like really talk. Or he'd be like, I just want you to know that I appreciate everything you do. You don't know.
Yeah. Flipping hell, mate. That is so hard. Because I know like the last signed pair of Jordans went for... Oh, flipping hell. I think they went for a couple of hundred thousand. It was like a lot. It was like a lot.
Yeah, but you could film this conversation with Jackson. I mean, maybe you could parlay this into TV appearances.
Maybe I could
start
like an OnlyFans account with me and Jackson.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm going to say Jackson. I'm going to do Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Round two. It's getting a little bit tougher.
Okay.
Would you rather be able to talk to Jackson for 24 hours or have a 2-day hang/retreat filled with epic activities like cliff diving, bungee jumping, 5-star dining with Travis and Lars?
Wow. Oh, flipping hell. Yeah, Travis and Lars, mate. It's got to be done, man. It's got to be done, mate. It's got to be done.
Okay, so now that's the leader in the clubhouse. So now everything gets compared to that. That
is
the top of the top. Would you rather have your 2-day hang retreat bro time with Travis and Lars or be allowed to co-design a new pair of off-whites with Virgil?
Wow. Flipping. Mate, you've gone to town with this. This is great.
Yes.
This is great. Oh, my God. It's so hard. I think design a shoe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm designing a shoe.
So we're just leveling up. Okay. Here we go. Would you rather co-design a new pair of off-whites with Virgil or be able to talk to Travis, your son, right now for 24 hours and he can actually speak and tell you exactly what's been going on in his head since he was born?
Yeah, Travis, 100%. Yeah.
So Travis is the winner.
Travis is the winner. Yeah, there we go.
Ding, ding, ding. The game is over. All right, congratulations.
Great game,
thanks
mate.
For playing Would You Rather.
That is beautiful. That's great.
All right,
game,
buddy.
Mate.
Okay, well, thank you, sir. It's off to our main topic. There's nothing else to talk about. Oh, you did want to mention what's going on with the Ons.
So, obviously, me being like a sneakerhead.
On sneakers.
You have influenced me into getting a pair of Ons. And a few other people who I know around here, but there's this thing that I have, and it's like, get all the gear when you want to do something. It's like, now I'm getting back into fitness. I've just gone to town. I'm going to get the Apple Watch.
Yep.
I've got loads of new night stuff, but the Ons, mate, they everyone is raving about them at the minute, aren't they?
They're pretty fluffy, man. So I take my Ons to CrossFit with me. So there's two things that are happening in CrossFit usually. Okay. We're not going to go down the CrossFit rabbit hole. But you're, you know, at some point you're lifting, like Olympic weightlifting. Now, if you have fluffy shoes when you do that, it's not a great thing. You want something flat. Like, honestly, you could wear a pair of Vans. That would be great for lifting because you want it to be as flat as possible.
Yeah.
But the problem in CrossFit is they'll say, all right, lift that and then run outside and do a half a mile. And if you're running in Vans or in just like indoor soccer shoes, it's going to be tough on your feet. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll use my CrossFit shoes, which I wear Nike Metcons. So the Metcons are my favorite CrossFit shoe, even though there is a CrossFit company called Noble. I have some Nobles. They're okay. I'm a sneaker obsessive, but not the way you are. It's more like when I find something I like, I just have to have every color they make of that thing. Mm. But it's always something kind of lame. But I'm like, I've got 15 lame pairs of shoes.
No, but I like it. This is why I wanted to talk about it, because it's like, I've got the sneakers that I wear for like fashion and stuff, but I've never actually bought a pair of trainers for either running or the gym. And now I'm like diving into the other world of sneakers.
Yeah. So the On ones, I've never felt anything like that when running. I mean, they are meant to be true running shoes, and it's incredible because they're totally light. I was wearing them last time at NAMM, and like, I mean, it feels like you're walking on springs. Like your feet never get tired in those shoes. So yeah, I think you'll really enjoy those a lot. And then if you go down the training route, I would just get a pair of the newest Nike Metcons, cause those are, sorry, the Nike Metcons.
the Nike Nike situation.
yes. But those are great, man. You'll enjoy the Ons a lot, man. They're really, really comfortable. Because that's been a tough thing, too, is like in the past, a lot of times functional trainers, functional sneakers kind of went a little dad. It was like, you look like you work at a grocery store, man. The Ons are like stylish and functional at the same time. So,
yeah, they're very, very nice, man. I like how they're just like an independent sort of, are they Scandinavian or something? Are Scandinavian or
yeah,
Swiss?
I don't know. I know that who's the tennis pro Federer?
Yeah,
Roger Federer.
Yeah.
He's involved in the company. Oh, so
beautiful,
awesome. Well, I think you guys got everything you needed. Thanks for checking out episode 16.
Yeah. Very drum heavy that was.
yeah, and the Patreons get the rest. That is a wrap. All right, let's get into it. Our main topic this time. By the way, we are going to actually bring in questions into the podcast this episode, so I'm excited about that. We'll get to those in a bit. But our main topic is imposter syndrome, and I think we need to define this first because I think that imposter syndrome gets confused quite often as self-doubt or negative attitude or, you know, just bad ego. That is not the case at all. So imposter syndrome is not self-doubt. Imposter syndrome is when your self-doubt is telling you that your skills and talents don't match up to your accomplishments. And that itself causes you to worry about being exposed as a fraud. So that's the entire thing of imposter syndrome. It's not just, oh, I suck or whatever. It's like, that's self-doubt. We all have that at times. Imposter syndrome is when that self-doubt creeps in and says, you know what? You're getting a lot of credit, but you don't deserve it. Yeah. And that is a tough thing. I mean, I think, you know, imposter syndrome became a thing. It became a term, and there was a paper written about it in the late 70s. But I didn't hear about it. It was never on my mind, or I never thought about it until like maybe 6-7 years ago. So it was pretty new. But I think social media definitely made it a lot worse, because there were people that were just doing very normal things, like showing the plate of food they had for the day, and they have 100,000 followers. There's got to be some imposter syndrome setting in, going like, wait, why would 100,000 people want to see what I'm eating for breakfast?
Yeah.
Then when it comes to something like what you and I do, which is a skill, that's really tough because there's no way of getting around it. You and I know that there are drummers that are far more accomplished on the instrument than you and I are, and they have 100 followers.
Yeah.
And we have a large following. So there's this thing that creeps into you and says, man, you don't deserve this. Have you experienced this at all?
Yeah, mate, I am imposter syndrome. I am the I am what it looks like in physical form. I even this podcast, mate, you know, like a part of me just think that's why I'm so blown away with the Patreon side of things. I'm like, mate, this is crazy. People want to hear us talk and to hear me talk and to hear you talk. And it's kind of, yeah, I have it all the time. I recently got an angel and a devil tattooed on me, on one arm and the other arm, because I have it, mate, constantly. It's this constant thing between, yeah, you deserve to be here. Yeah, you're good at what you do. And then, oop, no, you're not. You don't really deserve to be here. This is pure luck. When is the luck going to run out? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
So, yeah, I've got it. Do you have it?
No. Just kidding.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
So anyways, we'll see you guys next
stopped week. At that bit. No. Can you explain how it feels?
Yeah. Okay, so yes, I do. Let me give this to everyone that's listening at home. I think this will help put things into perspective so that you don't feel like, oh man, am I a freak for feeling this way? Here are the types of people that are most likely to experience imposter syndrome. Perfectionists. They set extremely high expectations for themselves, and even if they meet 99% of their goals, they still feel like failures for not meeting 100% of their goals. Next type, experts. Now, this is kind of where we fall in. We feel like we are experts in the field of drumming, but we feel like we need to know everything about drumming because we say, well, we're professional drummers. And when all of a sudden we realize, well, I'm not an expert at jazz drumming, I'm not an expert at Indian drumming, we start to feel like failures. We feel like we're pulling the wool over somebody's eyes because we have put ourselves out there to the public as experts at this thing, but we actually don't know everything about this thing. So that creates the imposter syndrome. All right. Natural genius. When they struggle with anything, they're so used to things being natural and coming easy to them that they feel like something's wrong and maybe they're not really naturally that smart after all. You and I do not have to worry about that because we are natural morons and that's not a problem. Soloists, here we come to us again, feel they have to accomplish every task on their own, and if they have to ask for help, that means that they're a failure. Mm. I, as an only child, 1,000% identify with that. I try to do everything by myself, and it's really hard to even type something into Google and ask Google for help. I'm like, no, I can figure this out on my own. I'm not using Aunt Google. All right, and then supermen or superwomen who push themselves to work harder than everyone else around them and prove that they're not imposters. They feel they have to succeed in all aspects of life, work, parenting, partners, and they feel stress when they're not accomplishing something or moving forward. So I think that really ties itself to our last episode about drive. So many of these things are about driven people that also feel this weight on their shoulders that they have to prove something and they have to live up to something. And I think imposter syndrome really sets in when you yourself are the ones that set that expectation for the world. I mean, you and I came to the internet at some point in our careers and said, no, I'm actually proficient at this and I can tell you how to do this. Well, then as soon as you don't know something, you feel like, oh, God, they're going to figure me out. They're going to figure me out. And it's like the thing that I think you have to understand when it comes to imposter syndrome is they already figured you out. They already understand. The world knows that you're not perfect. We're the ones that used social media to put out a perfect version of ourselves that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
It's not that it's a lie, right? I mean, there's nothing that you and I have ever done on the internet that's a lie. It's that it's an unfinished story. You didn't see the 40 takes that led up to the take that you got to see.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that makes the imposter syndrome kind of worse because it's like this fear of being found out almost. Like, I think that's why clinics are so stressful for me because I'm like, all people see of me is me playing a 1 minute clip. And sometimes that's, you know, quote unquote perfect. I haven't made a mistake or whatever. And then when it comes to a clinic, you're like, oh, there's no hiding anything. Am I going to be found out for being human, for being
right,
just like everyone else? Do you know what I mean? And it's that weird feeling of people just seeing an end product of something and then loving that. And then you realizing that, well, that took me this amount of time and it was really, really difficult. So am I an imposter? Do you know what I mean? It's that constant thing.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So the clinic thing is such a perfect example because when I'm on stage, there's a moment where I think 80% of the people that are in the crowd could be on this stage right now. Why am I up here? I do not deserve to be up here. I haven't done anything that these people can't do. And then that puts you in a really bad place because you start playing outside of your comfort zone, pushing yourself further than you should. I can only imagine, and I didn't have to do it, you did, but I can only imagine the swings of emotions you must have went through on that Marco Miniman tour, thinking, no, he's a clinician. I'm just some kid that got lucky and won the lottery and won the Euro Millions. I shouldn't be up here right now. Is that what your lottery's called? The Euro Millions?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I have no idea, mate.
But I mean, that's, and I, cause the only reason I say that is that's exactly how I would have felt, like, oh yeah, this guy with 40 drums and 18 pedals, that's a drum set clinician, not me.
Yeah. 100%. And the clinics are a very weird situation, unless everyone is there to see you and you're the only one playing. It's like,
right.
What goes through my head is, well, a million things, but one of them being, oh, that guy over there, I bet he likes groove. And here I am going fucking crazy. And then when I'm playing groove, I'm looking over at that guy, a girl, thinking, yeah, they probably want me to play chops. And it's that constant thing of just like, I am an imposter. What is going on here? But then there is something in my head that says, yet again, it's the devil and angel constantly. The angel sort of pipes up and says, mate, you aren't here out of, they haven't just picked you off the street. You are here for some reason. So, like, yes. Remember that. And that is hard to do at times, but...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in those moments, what's creeping into me, the one thing that can throw me off my game more than anything, and I always put myself in this situation, is when whoever the tech is or whoever the guy that's helping out for the day, I'm like, hey, will you play the kit real quick so I can go hear what it sounds like front of house? And that guy's always better than me. It's never failed. The guy's always better than me. And I'm like, why am I here? I'm not even the best drummer in the room. And there's only four people here.
I love
and
that.
And it just, it ruins my day where he's like, yeah, yeah, sure. Do you want just like some groove or do you want something kind of weckle-ish? And I'm like, oh boy. Oh God. Oh,
get off.
Really need you to go up and, yeah, I need you to go up and suck so that I can then feel better about myself.
Yeah.
I mean, imposter syndrome is definitely a real thing. It's a very common thing, especially in situations like being a musician where you've set yourself up. I mean, even think about being in a band. As soon as you're in a band, you're starting to think like how quick until the band is wishing they had a different drummer that grooved harder or played in better time. Like you start to feel like I don't deserve to even be in this band. Mm. So it starts right away because you're the solo drummer in the band. And you're just thinking like, oh God, there's so much better drummers in my town that have a, you know, maybe they fit better or they have a better look and they have a cooler drum set. And you're immediately thinking that you don't belong and you're a fraud and you got this thing that you wanted. It was a gift to you to be in this band or to have this musical situation. And now you feel like it's going to get taken away from you.
Yeah, I think
so. There's so many aspects of fear involved too.
It's really hard in music as well. I feel like if you're in like straight up business or something or sport, it's like there is sort of an end goal. Within music, it's like there is no, oh, I've done it, I've completed it, or I am the best, because there is no the best. I might think this person's the best and you might think that person's the best. So it's very hard. So it's very easy even to constantly think, well, I don't deserve to be here, because yeah, I could be like, well, I've done this and I've done that. But then that person might not care about that. So it's this constant thing of just trying to make yourself aware that you deserve to be wherever you are and deserve to be doing whatever you're doing. It's really weird because it's art, isn't it? There is no sort of number one, really, is there?
And that's one of the best parts of art, but it can contribute to not knowing where you stand, is because we're not competing in any real form other than in our heads and in our hearts. And that's what messes up. Now, I usually brag about like the greatest thing about music is there's no finish line. You're never going to win. And there's also the one thing I do truly love about the drums and music in general. There's no peak as far as your age. Like you don't peak at 26. Like you keep playing until one day you're just like, yeah, I feel like, no, I think I'm going to die. And then you die. And then it's over. And you're like, hey, I peaked it at 86.
Yeah,
great.
You get
good
better,
job.
Mate. You get better.
Totally. So I do love that. But I agree because, you know, if you were on a track team in high school, well, every week there's a track meet and you know how you stack up against the other people that sprint in your local area. You don't have that with drums. And so it's all in your head. And then you log on to Instagram or YouTube and you're like, I've never heard of this person. This person has no endorsements and they are doing things that I can't do. And I truly believe they're better at doing them than me. Yet I have endorsements with major companies. I get to do clinic tours. I don't deserve any of this. And so it's a constant battle. Now, the key to all of this is, I think the key that got me through most of it and why I haven't really felt the imposter syndrome until our podcast took off. And I was like, well, that's another thing that I suck at. Why are we successful at this? The key is what we talked about two episodes ago, which is your voice.
Yes.
Once I found my voice, then I didn't care who was good, how fast somebody was. I knew that I had my voice and no one else has my voice. And then the imposter syndrome just faded away.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most beautiful thing about any instrument. It's just like, there's no two of you. And that's what I love, man. Like, the next time, when I get over that sort of imposter syndrome and I'm just like, you know what, mate, just play how you play, speak how you speak, and just do it your way because there's no one else who's doing it like that. And I think that's what everyone needs to remember, even if it's just posting a video on Instagram or YouTube or whatever you're doing, however big or small. It's just like, mate, it doesn't matter how technical or good it is on paper. It's just the amazing thing is that it's you, and that's what separates you. But so that's what I always try and tell myself. But there is definitely a positive side to imposter syndrome, where we were talking on voice notes how it can bring that sort of competitiveness out in you with yourself almost. Yes. And leading up to a clinic or something like that, or even like this training that I'm doing, I'm like, well, I'm going to prove the devil wrong,
Yeah,
it's that constant thing 100%. Of just going back and forth. But it's like, well, at least I have something to sort of use as my fuel.
The imposter syndrome can put you into, well, what you think the imposter syndrome is. It can put you into situations where, like, okay, your name got you to a point. And this is, I mean, you and I, even though we act on the podcast like we're best mates, it's because we're in our honeymoon phase. Like, we're just too new at friends to know anything bad about each other. A year from now, it won't be like this. I'm not going to be this like happy to like talk to you. But right now, we might as well take advantage of it because I kind of dig you now.
The podcast is going to be like, hi, how are you? Yeah. Why are you asking? What do you mean? What do you mean, how am I?
I told you last week, Eddie, just stop. So anyways, your recognition on social media got to a point where I was very, very adamant that you should be a part of like a drum festival that I was getting ready to do. And that puts you in, and I just said, well, yeah, like Eddie should do it. And then the guy that was putting on was like, yeah, that sounds great. And that was because of him knowing about your social media and the fame that you had garnered for yourself. Well, that call then puts you into a moment where you go, yeah, yeah, I can totally do it. And then you have to hang up the phone and be like, oh my God,
yeah,
I'm going to have to play right after Stanton Moore or Anna Kanellis or whoever. And I think that thing, like, it can trigger you into something very positive where it's like, well, I'm here now. I can't let these people down. I have to rise to the occasion. And 100%. I think that's a good thing.
Yet again, this podcast, having these sort of subjects that we talk about each week, I have to think about them and sort of reverse engineer myself and really sort of dissect the subject in order to speak about it and understand it more. And yeah, it gives you something to do. It gives you something to think about. It gives you something to create. And that's the sort of side of it that I love, man. I love it. It's just that, yeah. Otherwise, I think you get in your head too much and you won't ever sort of do things. We talk about being doers and stuff. And I think that comes from just muting that devil sometimes and just being like, who cares if I'm an imposter or not? I'm just going to do things and create things and play and blah, blah, blah. And then I think over time that devil sort of gets, he fucks off basically.
Well, I think it comes down to, are you an imposter or not? Is 90% of everything you're doing coming directly from somebody else? Are you a thief? Are you stealing these ideas? I logged in today to YouTube and it was shocking how many video guys were using the exact title of something that Peter McKinnon just did a week ago. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
How do you, and you, and these are guys that I'm like, you're really good. You have a massive following. You don't need to steal this stuff anymore. By the way, the episode Theft is coming up in 2 weeks, but it's really important that I think you can get yourself out of those negative feelings of imposter syndrome if you know that you're not a thief. Now, keep in mind, in our world, in the drum world, everything that Eddie and I will ever play on the drum set likely has been played before by somebody else. All we can do is rearrange the notes and put our voice on that thing. So that's not what I'm talking about. We know that we're getting our content, as far as our drumming content, we are getting that from the history of the instrument. And we can go back to Chick Webb and find things, and Papa Joe Jones, and find these things where it's like, damn, I literally just learned that 2 weeks ago. I had no idea it's been going on for 60 or 70 years or more. I'm talking about the little things where you know, like the title of somebody's video, the thumbnail, the things where it's like, man, that's the creative side. That's your voice. Stop stealing someone else's voice. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Don't steal people's voices, because that's the only thing that you have over your heroes. Like, you literally, as Eddie Thrower, your voice is more your voice than Travis could ever do, than Lars could ever do. It's the one thing you have over your heroes. And if you know that you've created your own voice, then that imposter syndrome can do what you said, the F word off.
And yeah. I love how I just finished it with that. I was like, I was trying to think of like a really sort of elegant way of ending my sentence. And I just thought, you know what? The devil can fuck.
Yeah, in a British accent, it was elegant. Okay, so as far as how do you fix the imposter syndrome and how do you eradicate it? First of all, acknowledge it and acknowledge the fact that you don't want to eradicate it. Like Eddie said, I mean, he's got a devil and an angel tattooed on his arms to say, look, I've tried everything I can. I can't get rid of these two. They are here to stay. So acknowledge that it's there, and then try to, in each specific moment, try to figure out, is this helpful or hurtful? This moment that's happening right now, is the imposter syndrome kicking me into action? Is it motivating me to do something, or is it making me want to just sit on the couch? And sometimes you do have to silence that thing, that negative self-talk, the self-doubt that's creeping in. You just have to say, look, you're not helping me. You're not motivating me to do anything. You're talking me out of things. That is something that's really important, is starting to interact with the imposter syndrome and interact with the self-doubt. The other thing is, and this is something that is the reason this podcast exists in the first place, share your feelings with friends. Eddie and my friendship was literally born out of two people that had no one else to vent to about what online creators go through. And so it wasn't like we got on the phone. I was like, so are you married? Do you have a dog? Like, we didn't talk about that. It was like, oh my God. When this happens and when this happens, and we had to get that stuff out. And I mean, mate, go ahead.
No, could you imagine if I DM'd you and said, hey, I'm absolutely killing it. I'm smashing it. I just want a few tips. It's like, for me, mate, I love the sort of, it's so attractive for me when a human being or anyone is acknowledging the imposter syndrome and says, look, I'm not the best. You know, I'm not trying to be, but this is what I've learned and blah, blah, blah. And this is what helped me. But also, right, I need some help. I love that. And I think that's how you should be as a musician, really. I think you should never, ever, ever think of yourself as just being like, well, I've done it. I've completed it. And then when you speak to people, I can play a nine. Yeah, I just choose not to. It's that sort of arrogance. You know what I mean? That I love it when someone just says, or someone gets on stage and just says, hi. I mean, I do it at every clinic. I'm like, hi, my name's Eddie. I'm very, very nervous right now because I've got 300 drummers staring at me. And I just love that, mate. I think that's how musicians should be, because there's always something to learn. There's always something to do that you've never done before. And I think, like you said, our relationship, mate, I reached out basically saying, fucking hell, mate, I need some help. I'm starting to lose my mind a little bit. Can you, if you're kind enough, get on the phone? But our relationship.
Well, and to be honest, you know, that helping you go through things that I had already gone through, that was massively beneficial to me to be like, okay, so because when I did it, I was doing it in a vacuum and I had no one to reach out to. And so knowing what you were going through was like just this validation that I wasn't crazy. And so, you know, and then at some point, that balance of power finally evened out and we were both on the exact same level and you were helping me as much as I was helping you. And it was nice to just be like, okay, I'm going to bleep this out, but it's a shit day. I'm calling Eddie because I have no one else to talk to. And to be honest, there's no way that our spouses, that Amber and Rona, can comprehend what we're going through in these. I mean, you're in a storage container and you couldn't be more isolated. I'm in just like a nicer storage container or a bigger storage container.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be more isolated. My door is locked. We're not open to the public. There's no staff here. And so I just have no one that understands what I'm going through. Mm. And it's nice to have somebody. So that's, I mean, those two tips. One, acknowledge the imposter syndrome and start to interact with it. Figure out, all right, are you there to push me into something and drive me into action? All right, then I'm going to keep you around. These thoughts are okay. That self-doubt is pushing me to do something better. Or are you just useless? Then I'm going to ignore you today. And then the next thing is find someone that you can talk to. Reach out to a close friend and just tell them what you're going through. And I know that that's kind of the solution for all mental health issues, but definitely with imposter syndrome, because the great thing you get with that is an outside perspective of somebody that's like, dude, I kind of think you, I mean, man, I can't tell you how many times it helped me to hear you say, I do think you have a voice when I still thought I didn't have a voice.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, all right, man, well, I trust you as a friend. And I know you've been honest with me plenty of times to be like, I don't know what you're doing with your hair right now. And it's like, all right, he was honest about that. So I'm going to assume he's honest about this. But
that's why I think this podcast has hit home a little bit. Maybe hit home is not the right sort of term. But I guess the reason why this podcast is how, I don't know how to word it. I don't want to say doing well because it's, you know, that sounds so fucking like salesman, but
why it's making such an impact.
Yeah. Because I feel like we're talking about stuff that no one really talks about. And I feel like being a drummer, you are doing exactly what me and Mike are doing. You're in your little practice room in your bedroom, wherever you are, chipping away at something. And your mates who aren't drummers don't know what you're going through. Your partners, your family don't. So it's really nice to just talk to like-minded people about real stuff that you're going through, because it may not seem like, oh, you know, a big deal that you can't play this paradiddle or six-stroke roll, but it's more than that, mate. It's deeper than that, isn't it? It's like it's self-discipline and it's doubt, and then it's pushing for something and it's being consistent. There's so many, like I keep on saying, mate, there's so much I've learned about myself through the drum kit. So it's really cool that we have this community, mate, where we can just talk about this stuff. And it's really nice for us. I know we keep on saying it, it's really therapeutic for us, but it is for someone who, you know, two people that teach this instrument, it's really nice for us to say, look, sometimes we're going through it and we're struggling and we have that same thinking. Gosh. As you guys do. It's just wicked that we all sort of get brought closer.
I have such a passion for certain styles of music and genres of music, especially world groove stuff. So I really don't think my drumming would sound the way it does if I didn't dive deep into Brazilian drumming. But there's an imposter syndrome of, I've never been to Brazil. I'm not Brazilian. I don't play in a batucada group. I'm not. It's like, okay, well, when I think about, well, how'd you dive into it? I bought books written by American drummers. Okay. About Brazilian culture. Yep. Had they been to Brazil? Nope. Okay, great. So that's how I learned about Brazilian music. What else? I bought Now That's Samba 2008 on CD. And I bought Now That's Bossa Nova 2006. It's like, okay, well, so that's a thing where it's like, okay, but so am I not allowed to share my passion for what I know about this culture, even though, and I think it just comes down to being like what Eddie said at the beginning of a clinic, just acknowledge, hey guys, Mike Johnston here. Just want to give you a heads up. I'm a Californian Caucasian who's never been to Brazil. I just really love what I hear about this stuff and what I've heard so far. And I want to share that with you because I'm passionate about sharing that. I think honesty will get you out of a lot of imposter syndrome situations because you just have to be honest. Like, look, I've never been to Africa, but it doesn't mean I can't teach the stuff I know.
And that's the thing, mate. Like, that's why I think a lot of people, regardless of your age, don't want to post on social media because they're left with this, well, why? I've only got 15 followers or whatever. And it's like, that's the imposter syndrome setting in. That, well, I don't want to post that because who cares? It's like, mate, honestly, if you can just push through that sort of horrible feeling that stops you from doing stuff. You never know what's around the corner. And it's like, I think, you know, when you are someone who's successful or is good at what they do and you're like, well, how did you do it? It's always, the answer's always the same, isn't it? It's like, well, I just did it. I just started doing stuff. Like when I started posting drum videos, I had nowhere near the sort of engagement I get now, but that wasn't stopping me. I was just, you know, I was never thinking, I have more imposter syndrome now, but back then I was never thinking, oh, you know, I don't deserve to do this. I just wanted to create something and play and have a reason to sort of practice because I wanted to film and get better and put it up online. And I feel like it's just so, so easy for the mind to take over and say, oh, but who cares? Who cares? I mean, I have it when I film vlogs, you know, and I'm always trying to battle that devil, but going back to my point, mate, I really hope listeners of this podcast just turn the camera on and just play and upload regardless of how many followers you've got, mate, because that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is that you're creating and just fucking shutting that devil up.
Absolutely, 100%. All right, we hope that this really, like Eddie said, hit home with you guys, because this is something we all go through and nobody's protected from it. Trust me. I've had, you know, clinic tours with some of the greatest drummers in the history of the instrument. And I was always shocked that the self-doubt that they had and what crept into them. I was like, whoa, I mean, I got your autograph 10 years ago at NAMM. Yeah. You think that about yourself?
Yeah. Marco did it, mate.
It's
which made it even worse. Yeah. You know, there's me like on the way to a clinic. So what are you going to play? And he's like, oh, I might solo for 45 minutes. And I'm like, what the fuck? What do you mean you're just going to solo for 45 minutes? Just, have you not thought about this? We're on in an hour and a half. So right. that was even, for me, yeah. I was like, okay, look, he is very confident and he obviously doesn't have that imposter syndrome, but I do. And that's when I just embraced it, you know, just thought, well, I do, and I'm going to talk about it.
And, you know, and the other thing is, I think that you have to look at it like, okay, but he has put everything he's ever done into this instrument for this type of moment. You know, I mean, a clinic for a Virgil Donati, a Thomas Lang, a Marco Miniman. I mean, they're bred for it. Like they've done everything they can for that moment. So maybe Marco would feel different if you guys were on your way to audition for LTA. You know, it was like, no, you just need to be a rock guy with a kick, snare, and hats. That's all you get.
Yeah.
And you would be thinking, oh my God, it's a home run. I don't even have to try. And Marco might be thinking like, I've got this. And I don't know what his accent is. I don't know where he's from. I think
that
from
was
Austria.
English, wasn't it? That was English.
Sorry. Yeah. Where is he from? Is he German? Yeah, or is he Austrian?
Yeah, he's German. Yeah, but he's I think he lives. He does live in California, so he's got this like weird twang. I was very nervous going into his accent. Then I really didn't want to offend him. I'm sure he's not listening, but I didn't want to piss him off or piss anyone off.
Well, he's got enough confidence that we could talk smack about him for a whole hour, and he'd be like, "No, I don't agree."
Yeah, I'm gonna go do a solo for an hour just to piss you off.
Yeah, while you guys try to figure out a fill. Way to go, kids! All right. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Now it is time to get to our Patreon questions. So like I said, if you guys sign up for Patreon, it would mean the world to us. Just go to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie, the word and you can become a Patreon, and then you can submit questions because you will get the Drum with Mike and Eddie email address. All right, so let's get into it. Our first one is from Pascal. If you want to follow him on Instagram, it's @Pasio_CNTM. That is @PASSIO_CNTM. And his question is, what was your experience and story on how to get to the path in life where you wanted to become a professional drummer?
Wow.
So how did we go from being two guys that played the instrument to all of a sudden, no, that's actually my career? Now, real quick, I actually want to throw in a second question because Billy Shavils, I'm going to do my best on that one, had a very similar question, which is how do you gain the confidence and ability to pursue drums as a career? So I think this is all the same answer. How did you go from being just the average dude that played drums, all of a sudden, I'm going to do this for a lifetime? And how do you have the confidence and how do you build the confidence to say, no, this can work?
Yeah.
Do you have an answer?
Flipping hell. It's like, I feel like, you know, how long is a piece of string? It's like, right, bear with me. Here we go. For me, it was the only thing that I actually enjoyed doing. It was something that grabbed my attention that no one or nothing else did. So that was the first thing. It was like, well, I just love doing this, so I'm going to keep on doing it. So that was the thing that sort of made me think, yeah, I want to do this as a living. And then I started getting into bands and saw people play huge shows. And I was like, right, I want to do that. And I think I never really had the confidence to do it as my living. There was never one day where I thought, right, today's the day I'm going to start doing this for a living. It was simply just utter addiction and obsession and living a life that I wanted to live with friends in college and getting in smaller bands and touring around. It was just utter obsession. And then that stemmed, and it's just, I don't know how to word it, mate. It's really weird. It's just from utter obsession, mate. I just started playing more shows, meeting different people in different bands, playing more shows. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I am doing this for a living. And I think it comes back to the most important question is like, do you love it? Do you truly, truly love it? And I think if you do, then you will sort of eventually make it happen one way or another. And I know that sounds like a very broad, non-helpful answer, but it was just pure love, mate, pure love for the instrument and just not wanting to do anything else. Quite literally, like, I didn't do anything else, mate. I had no mates. I played no sports. I got home from school and went on the drum kit until I couldn't play anymore. And that was it.
Yeah, I think same thing. It was something that was a hobby. And as a kid, all of a sudden, things just started getting cut out of my life to make more time for drums without any thought that it could possibly be a career. I mean, I really thought I was going to be a school teacher. That was since I was maybe 7 or 8 years old. I was sitting in class judging the teachers on their delivery and thinking, I could do this better. I know I'm 7, but I think that I can do this better. I always wanted to be a school teacher. That was the only thing that I saw in my day-to-day life as a child that I wanted to do what they were doing. When I'd see like the fire truck drive by, I didn't think I want to be a fireman. Even though I loved space, I didn't think I wanted to be an astronaut. But when I saw a teacher get up in front of a class and do their thing, I was just, I mean, I got horrible grades because I couldn't stop paying attention to the delivery and I never got any of the information. I was just obsessed with it. So all of a sudden, the drums just kept taking up more and more time, but with no reward. There was no money coming in. There was no thought of, oh, if I just get better, I can get a record deal or I'll be in a band. It was just like, I was obsessed, just like Eddie said. And I think that that is the key. I mean, you have to, on your personal compass, you need to replace that N at the top that says North. You have to replace that with the word joy. And guy, just turn your compass towards joy all the time, your personal compass. And if you're always going closer to joy in whatever your job is and whatever your pursuit is, then it's just, I mean, that's the thing, is like the worst times on the drum set were never that bad. Like the most frustrating times ever on the drum set, way better than a day of work at something I don't want to do.
Yeah. 100%.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
And so I think that you just have to kind of do that. And then you have to understand too that there's just times that this wouldn't have been a good year to be like, I think I'm going to be a pro drummer in 2020. But if you said that in 2019, like this was going to be a really rough year for you. And no one could predict that. And so I think that we have a lot of great opportunities coming our way because the world is starved for human interaction and starved for live music. And there will be more opportunities because there will be more of it. And places that never considered having live music, once there's a vaccine and it is widely spread, those places will be like, we just want life back in our cafe. We want life back in our restaurant. So we're going to hire a band. And so I think this is a really good time to point your compass in that direction.
Mate, go
ahead.
I've got an amazing quote on a podcast the other day, and he basically said pressure over passion. And I just thought of a point regarding like turning this into a living. I feel like if I could go back in time, I kind of wouldn't have got obsessed with doing this for a living so much. I would have just worked, and I did work any shitty job that I could, but just really, really focused on the passion side of things and the progression on the kit, and then allowing the sort of career aspect to then just happen when it happened. I feel like so many people now, I think due to Instagram or social media, are so, well, I have to call this my living. You know, I can't work another job. It has to be I have to be doing this paid gig. I have to be doing that. I have to be seen doing this and that. And I think if you allow that pressure, it is going to overweigh that passion. And I think, you know, I have to remind myself of that sometimes, you know, it's like, mate, just play the drums for fun sometimes. And that will show and amount to something more important, you know? So that's a tip for me, mate. Just don't, I used to deliver pizza, Indian, Chinese, any shitty job I could, just so I could go play shows with my mates. And yeah.
Totally. I mean, and that I've always said, there's nothing more respectable or that I respect more when somebody has a terrible job that they hate so they can play drums.
Exactly.
I do not consider that to be a failure. I'm like, no, you love the drums so much that you're working a job you don't want to do just so that you can say, okay, the second I'm off the clock, that job is out of my head and I am 24. I'm just all in on being a drummer. I think that's amazing. And I would never, ever tell somebody like, oh, no, you got to quit Costa Coffee. You got to quit Starbucks. It's like, no, you do whatever you have to do to be a drummer. And not to mention, you know, we don't mention it here maybe because we're now endorsed and it's, but we have to acknowledge the fact that we weren't always endorsed and drumming is expensive, you know, so sometimes it takes, I got to have two jobs because if I crack a cymbal, I'm out $300. And my band doesn't care. They're like, your cymbal sounds bad. I'm like, well, yeah, I know. But it's 2 weeks of work to get another one. 2 weeks of work without eating to get another one. So I think that that's a very big thing. All right. On to our last question. Tammy's asking. This is a really good question. I've been playing drums for about 10 years, but only started playing with other musicians about a year ago. Suddenly, everything feels 20 times harder. It's hard to listen to the other musicians, keep time, even with a click. And my nerves are all over the place. Even if I can play with a gap click and feel confident or record myself and think I sound okay during my practice sessions, as soon as I play with others, I start to mess up. What advice do you have for staying calm and relaxed when jamming with others? Such a common thing.
Yeah, massively common. And I feel like with COVID, it's like, you know, my answer is not going to help. But it's just simply just play with real human beings, mate. They're just get in a room with people and play as many shows, weddings, as many things as you possibly can. No, doesn't matter how big, how successful, how glam they are. That's the one thing that I look back and I'm so thankful for, mate, is as soon as I picked up a pair of sticks, I was playing with people, mate. I used to create bands. I was in like 8, 9, 10 bands at one point, just playing as many shows as I possibly could, rehearsing with as many people as I could. And I think that's a really, really important thing because, as you know, practicing on your own in a room is, you think it's difficult, and then you're put in a situation where, you know, a real human being is staring at you, or even worse, a crowd, and it all freezes up. And there's no way of really, well, I guess there is, but for me, it's like the only way to get better at those things is to do more of those things.
Do them, yeah. Well, and the other thing that's tough too is that everything that social media told you that was important, you realize as soon as you play with other humans, none of that is important. And all they care about is you staying in time and playing with proper feel. And you're thinking like, no, but you don't understand. I worked really hard on this fill. And it's like, no, none of it matters. Can you please? I mean, what we have to understand as drummers and what you have to understand, especially when you're coming up on the instrument, is whoever you're playing with has as big, if not a bigger ego than you. So they brought you here to make them sound better at their instrument. And if you, by being there, do not make them sound better on guitar and do not make them sound better on bass and sound better on keys and vocals, then you are not helping the situation for their ego. So you have to think like, well, how do I make you sound better on your instrument? And once you start doing that, they start reciprocating all that love. Like, dude, I love playing. Like anytime somebody has told me I love playing with this drummer, they've never talked about their drumming ever.
Yeah.
They only talk about like, man, it's just so easy to play with this person. And when they play, it's just, I can just be myself. And it's like, that's our job, is to provide this amazing foundation. Now that foundation can be extremely advanced and complicated, like animals as leaders and periphery. That's fine as well. I'm not saying to play simple. I'm saying to play for the moment. And the more you do that and realize that the things that you would show someone on Instagram, no one in your band cares about that. They care about like how tight the band sounds. So Tammy, I think one thing you definitely need to do is start searching out drumless tracks during the COVID time that don't have a click. and get used to just interacting with music. One of the most brilliant things I ever heard somebody tell me was from Mark Juliana. And I can't remember what was going on. I mean, we were doing a camp. I remember that. But I can't remember why he was talking about this. I think we were just talking about our playlists on. It was like a class where the pro drummers were going to just open up their laptops and be like, all right, this is what I'm listening to right now. And I remember Mark saying that he practiced to things that he knew for a fact were recorded with a click. And he focused on being flawless. And then he practiced to a whole nother playlist of things he knew for a fact were not recorded with a click. And that allowed him to work on his ear training and to bend his time based off of the music instead of trying to be flawless. And I thought that was a really cool tip that I'd never heard somebody say, like, you know, well, this live album, I know they didn't record it with a click. So I'm going to practice to this and try to use my ear to bend me forward and backwards on the beat, depending on what was happening emotionally on stage at that moment. And it's just developing that ear training. So Tammy, I would definitely say that. And as well, like I said, find as many drumless tracks. I mean, honestly, just go to YouTube and type in drumless track, no click, and definitely lots of things will come up. And just get used to playing with music because it's so different than playing in a room by yourself.
Yeah, massively, mate.
With no music.
And then, like I said, mate, just once we can, just get in a room with people, mate. It's so fun, yes. Man.
I think the other thing, and you probably experienced this, but it does not have to be a band. It really can be one other person that plays an instrument. Could even be a drummer, but you could just say, oh, you play guitar? Do you want to just come over to the house and jam?
Mate, that was my childhood.
It's still going to be the same thing.
Exactly. My brother played guitar, and I used to say, David, come downstairs. Like, let's jam to this. And I would show him a riff, or he would make one up, or we would play to Metallica. And it was just so good, mate. It's just, honestly, man, I feel like it's such an important thing to do. And obviously, during this weird fucking time, it's a little bit difficult. But I definitely think put that up in your priority list a little bit, man. Just like, as soon as we can, just look for cheap rehearsal rooms and just reach out to a few people and just get people down, mate, you know, and just have some jams.
Well, there you go. Those are our Patreon questions. If you want to ask a question, you can, if you're a part of our top tier, you can send it in audio form or video form. Or if you're part of the other tiers, you can always send it in text as well. And like I said, if you guys want to become Patreons, just go to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie. And you can be part of this insane family. I mean, the interaction on that page has already been just awesome. And it's only going to get crazier and crazier. So
I love it.
Dude, I feel like you and I personally kind of needed that episode because this podcast has brought on a bit of imposter syndrome for sure. You know, you and I had these initial talks about like, yeah, when we get to episode 100, maybe we'll launch a Patreon page. We weren't expecting it to grow as fast as it did and then to have as much reaction and recognition as it did. And all of a sudden we felt like, oh, crap, we're getting a lot of recognition for our daily phone calls. This is a little awkward.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, mate. It's crazy. I'm loving it, mate. And I just want to encourage everyone who's listening to just go do something. I've got it at the minute with a certain track. I want to film it for Instagram because I like this new track and it's just taking me ages and ages and ages. And I did this classic thing that I always flipping do, right? You probably do it as well. Everyone probably does it. You're jamming and you find a little magical moment and you're like, oh, that was cool. And then you go, right, I'll do that again. Just make it a little bit better. And then you ruin it. And then better never really comes. And then you end up playing for like an hour and then you delete the whole thing. And then you're like, right, I can't get it now. But I had it. It was this perfect thing.
Yeah.
So I've given myself.
Yeah, I've heard about people that are like that.
I've given myself like a one or two take rule now where I'm just like, right, that's that. And I feel like that helps it as well, mate. Just upload when you think something's not perfect and you realize that no one really cares and everyone just enjoys your drumming.
Yeah, and I think the text in the Instagram post or whatever post you're doing gives you an opportunity to fight off that imposter syndrome by just saying like, look, I know this isn't perfect, but this is what today was like. And I think the other thing, if you want to start breaking down the way you feel, especially if you're somebody that's like maybe in that 5,000 to 10,000 follower range and you're starting to feel the weight of like, oh, man, I'm just a person like drumming. My advice to you is start doing live Instagram feeds, like press live and put your phone near the kit and just talk to the phone and be like, look, like literally admit what's going on. Hey, just so you know, I appreciate all the comments on that last post. I just want you guys to know that was 25 takes. So here's what it's really like. I highly doubt I can do it right now. And that will take off so much pressure from the people that are following you. Yeah. And that will make them just engage so much harder because they'll be like, oh, thank you for not being perfect.
Yeah.
And I think that once you admit to the world, I'm wearing a bracelet right now that says embrace the suck. Once you admit to the world, look, I don't have all the answers. I don't have everything down. I'm just trying my best. Then that imposter syndrome starts to fade and it becomes something very beneficial. Like I said, it causes me and Eddie to go into action and to move forward with things. And that's what we want for all of you.
Yeah, man. Oh, I want to keep on talking. What are we? I've just seen the 1:09 pop up and I'm like, oh, for God's sake.
We gotta go.
I know.
All right, everybody. Have an amazing day. Get out there. Do something. Thank you guys for listening to all the Patreons. Thank you guys a ton. You have no idea how much it means to Eddie and I. You have caused at least 75 voice notes over the last week back and forth. When we're going like, we just hit 10. And then like today, we're like, we're at 49. This is incredible.
I know,
so, mate. Thank you. We don't take it for granted. We really appreciate it. You are keeping this podcast ad-free. Everyone have an amazing day. But for now, episode 16 is in the can.
Chow, chow.
Is it two chows? Or is it just chow?
No idea, mate. Not a clue.
I gotta
what's
say,
going
man,
anymore.
When we first started talking, like I would always show Amber, I'm like, check it out. He always says bye 19 times. All right, mate. Bye, 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 bye.
It's an English thing. It's an English thing. If we're going to leave this bit in, honestly, mate, it's an English thing. Everyone does it. Like, oh, you put your head down with the phone and you get further, you get closer to the table. You go, all right, mate, see you in a bit. Bye, 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 bye. Yeah. I say bye about 15.
I'd never heard it before, and I like saved like 6 of them. I'm like, check it out, Am. And I played them all, and then I had to... Talking about theft, I had to not be influenced by it because I found myself doing it to other people and I was like, no, that's Eddie's thing. Don't take his blah, 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 blah.
I always used to think it was weird in American films when no one used to say goodbye. That was a thing that I always noticed. In American films, they'd be like, yeah, I'll meet you at 12 o'clock and then just hang up the phone.
Just hang up the phone, yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. I guess if you're on your way to kill somebody, like, yeah, you don't really need to have pleasantries in a film.
Or the other one is a...
I usually just go with a late. Like, all right, man, I'll talk to you soon. Late, click.
Yeah.
So not funny. Later, just late, click.
So
but yeah,
funny.
You usually get a minimum of 8 buys in.
Yeah, see you later, mate. All right, bye. See you later, listeners. Bye-bye.
Like, dude.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What's wrong with his Vespa? He can't start his Vespa.
Yeah, it's weird as fuck.
Oh my god,
mate, I am fucking weird. Are you still recording?
All right, no, I'll stop now.
Okay, I'm
and
bye.
Late.